Tonight, we'll take a look at the 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand him, it, her, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. We could probably spend 2 months just looking at all the wonderful aspects of this. Bill W. said, "The other steps can keep us sober and somehow functioning, but step 11 can keep us growing if we try hard and work at it continually." By the way, and anything I speak of tonight, I just want to put it out here, is not promoting any particular belief system or negating any belief system. We're just going to take a look at prayer and meditation through the lens, almost like a mystery. And I like the word mystery because when you get involved in mystery, there's an openness to see, what's going to be there, instead of having all the answers. And we'll see how prayer and meditation relates both to the 12-step program and to the Buddhist teachings. And these teachings are valuable for people from any belief group. It doesn't matter. The other part is take what you can use and leave the rest. That was very helpful when I first came into AA to hear that, because I was starting to feel very controlled. You know, you come to meetings and you have to believe in God and you have to have a higher power. And it was like, wait, isn't it enough that I just stopped drinking? Give me a break. You know? But they said, take what you can use and leave the rest. I know when I was under the influence that I thought I could use were things that were really harmful. So I had to switch my brain totally to see what was really useful and non-harming. By the way, there's a group called Realistic Recovery, and they frame step 11 this way: engage through the practice of meditation to improve our conscious contact with our true selves, and then seeing beyond self. Also use prayer as a means to cultivate positive attitudes and states of mind. And that's really practical. The phrase that always jumps out for me is conscious contact, which means being present, being aware in each moment. And certainly in the throes of addiction, there's no clarity anywhere. I was in conscious or unconscious contact with my drug of choice. The contact was there, the conscious wasn't. And so we're talking about conscious contact. And I know for myself, even now, when the food addict in me comes to the fore, right, my mind gets trapped and hooked. And there's a wonderful word in Tibetan. Pema Chodron talks about it a lot. Shenpa means hooked. Shenpa. And I think Shenpa, S-H-E-N-P-A, means hooked. Hooked. And I get the vision of, I don't like the vision, but we know people go fishing and they hook a fish. And you see the fish flapping as they pull it in. I don't want to live by Shenpa. No more. No more. But even without a severe addiction, most of us are very often lost in our thoughts or lost in a regurgitation of some blah, blah, blah. Well, whatever it is, but we're almost entranced. It just goes on and on and on. And conscious contact is an aware connection, an aware connection. And then we see clearly. And when we see clearly, we have the power of choice. And we have the power of acting with discernment, acting with kindness, acting with generosity. And a whole life can change from that place. Even in the short meditation tonight, I suspect many of you saw a lot of just mumble-grumble going on up there. It just goes and goes and goes. It's like a fountain. And meditation is not about making them stop. You can't. What are you going to say to your thoughts? Stop. Sit. It doesn't work. That doesn't work like that. But to start to see it. And I remember when I first got what was going on up there, I thought, oh my God, I have been letting that rule my life. That was scary. That thought still come, you know, and if we can see them, good. Most of the time we are not in genuine contact with ourselves. And there was something in the Sunday paper that's kind of scary about what's going on in the electronic world. Advertisers now are more in contact with us than we are, and they are running us. I don't know, it's called selling secrets of phone users to advertisers. People now can track where you are, what you're buying, what you're talking to. And maybe you've all had this too. I'm sure you have, if you have a computer or a tablet or something. I looked up a particular doctor on Google, and a particular form of medicine, and I looked it up, and then I opened his website. That was all I did. A day later, I'm looking at something on the computer, and all of a sudden, his name comes up. Twice. The advertisement for him comes up. Now, if I'm not paying attention, what can start to happen is, oh, yeah, maybe I should go to that doctor. Maybe, oh, that's interesting. You know, you start to pay attention. What we are seeing on our screens is put there deliberately. Advertisers are making conscious contact with our unconscious. And I think this is something we really need to watch out for. There's a wonderful teacher, Ute Janiya. Some of you may have heard of him. He was at one point a successful businessman in Burma, and he was very close to some of the Burmese teachers there, and he would go very often to temple. And then at one point he took robes. And now he's a very sought-after monastic. He teaches meditation really, really beautifully and has his own way. And I was on a retreat with him, and he gave us wonderful ways to see things and contemplate. And he kept saying this, and I kept saying, what is he saying? He said, when you hear, are you listening? When you see, are you looking? And he did that with all the sense doors. How often are we hearing, but we're not really listening? How often have you been talking with somebody and you hear their voice and you kind of have a sense of what they're saying, but you're not really listening? And the same thing with seeing. Are you looking? And I mean, it changed everything for me just when I remember to do that. All of a sudden, I'm back in contact with what is there. So if nothing else tonight, if you want to just take away those two little... When you're hearing, are you listening? Bless you. And when you're seeing, are you looking? It just shifts the whole thing. Anyhow. So, prayer and meditation. So these are tools that help us access this state that is potentially there for all of us, which is clarity, which is open mind, which is consciousness. And then at some point, they're no longer tools. They're just a way of life. They're just a way of life. So prayer, what's prayer? I know a lot of people end up coming to places like this because they have trouble with the word God. And I'm not going to get too much into that, but how can any of us really know what God is, you know? And I bow to everybody's idea, but I don't know what it fully is, and it's a pointer. This is part of the mystery, I think. And it has many, many facets. And I said before something about the mystery that's in the power of prayer. There is an energy in prayer. They've done a lot of scientific things where they have found that, I think Larry Darcy did something. Was it Larry Darcy? I think. You know, when different plants were prayed over and other plants weren't and everything else stayed the same, the plants that were prayed for actually started to bloom more. But I don't know. I mean, you talk about mystery. But when we say a prayer, or this is how I'm looking at it for myself right now, saying a prayer is not about handing in a wish list and saying, you know, I'm busy right now, but please make sure I get it. That's not what it is. It's more like setting our intention. So Buddhist prayer is basically, the way I see it, a practice to awaken some of these inherent places in ourselves, capacities of strength, capacity of compassion and generosity and wisdom. But it's not about asking for something. And Buddhist prayer is also a form of meditation. You know, it points us to the blessings of life. And when we say certain prayers, we hear it, and it goes into our neurology, so to speak. And this kind of prayer can inspire our hearts to open, can inspire us to move towards wisdom, compassion. And it opens us up to the more of the beneficial. Even if you walk around and say the Serenity Prayer all day and listen to what you're saying, hearing, listening, and not hearing and listening to what's up here, your life has to change. So we start to teach ourselves with this prayer. For example, many years ago, I did a wonderful Dzogchen retreat in the Tibetan tradition, and there was a prayer that they used that I started to use before sitting. And what it does is it sets my intention. So I'll just share it to you. Grant me your blessings that my mind will turn to the Dharma. Now, I remember once asking Sharon Salzberg, but if we're saying grant me, who are we saying it to? Well, basically, we're saying it to ourselves. We're saying it to the part of ourselves that's not caught. Okay? Grant me your blessings that my mind will turn to the Dharma. Grant me your blessings that Dharma may become the path. Grant me your blessings that the path may lead to wisdom. Grant me your blessings that wisdom may clarify confusion. When I say it, it's a reminder. Rather than going, okay, I have 20 minutes, I better sit because then I have to go do X, Y, Z. See, if I do this one little piece first, more can change. So again, when I say it, I'm not soliciting the help of any particular higher being, but I am talking to that part of me that has that capacity. And that's important. So prayer, and used this way, is also a form of self-therapy. You know, because we're teaching ourselves. We can mentally talk through a problem somehow in a form of a prayer. And prayer very often becomes part of a decision-making process because you're hearing elements that you might not access otherwise. So the Serenity Prayer, oh my gosh, for me, that is a major anchor and a reminder. And there's so much wisdom in it, just the first few lines. And you don't even have to say, God grant me. Or if you have a belief in your heart moves out to a God and you say, God grant me, wow, what a connection. So there's no one way. But I usually say for myself, may I have the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And I have to tell you, I can say that a lot. Because stuff happens during the course of the day in a lot of different ways and a lot of disappointments. Just may I have the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And sometimes I say, may I have the serenity to accept that I can't have serenity right now. But do whatever works. May I have the courage to change the things I can. That's not so easy either. And then may I have the wisdom to know the difference. So much can change as we give ourselves to these, if we use them. And I think we would all do well, but it's totally up to everybody, to read and reflect on the St. Francis prayer on a daily basis, which is really about opening our hearts, putting our Shenpa-type sense of self off to the side. If anybody's interested, it's page 99 on the 12 and 12. So, okay. But here's another prayer that I think is so marvelous. You know, in this society where it's all about getting more, getting bigger, being bigger than the one before, so much comparing mind, trying to be as good as somebody else or making up stories about everybody, anything that brings us back to just a sense of, in this moment, what's here. So this is a wonderful poem/prayer by Tagore. It's called Fruit Gathering. He was an Indian poet and author, very influenced by the Buddha's teachings, especially nonviolence and kindness. And do we not need that in this culture? And the nonviolence really starts with ourselves. How do we be at peace with this person we live with 24/7? That's a whole other Dharma talk. Okay, so I just would like to read this. Let me not pray to be sheltered from dangers, but to be fearless in facing them. Let me not beg for the stilling of my pain, but for the heart to conquer it. Let me not look for allies in life's battlefield, but to my own strength. Let me not crave an anxious fear to be saved, but here I love this, but hope for patience to win my freedom. Grant me that I may not be a coward, feeling your mercy in my success alone, but let me find the grasp of your hand in my failure. It's really beautiful. The whole learning right there. People sign up for 8-week courses on compassion and fearless involvement in life, and I think you take something like that and read it every day and think about what it means and how it pertains to your life. Okay. Now, an essential quality of meditation is to know the mind. This thing we call the mind. With some work, we can end up quieting the mind a little bit, accepting when it's not quiet. And we can cultivate awareness so that we can be with what is. It sounds so simple, be with what is. But so often we don't like what is, and so we pretend it's not there, or we try to override it, or we try to make it different. And a very simple place is the weather, very simple. I love some of the weather conversations that happen in an elevator in an apartment house. Because a lot of times people don't know each other, so you say, hi, what do you think about the weather? And the other day I thought was beautiful, and I said to the person, wow, it's a lovely day. She said, lovely day? I can't stand it. I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't bear it. Why is it like this? It shouldn't be like this. Come on, we're in October. Can't stand the heat, and I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's going on. Okay. I said, yeah, it sounds hard for you. Because that's what was true. But, you know, even something like that, we get so worked up. And another place where you can really practice this is if you're online at the post office or someplace, and there are people who are slow in front of you. Notice. What's wrong with these people? Why can't they move fast? I mean, and it's there all the time, not liking what's there. How do we get... The other thing about meditation that is so powerful is learning to sit without having all the answers. A really powerful refrain is, I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know. But not like a give up, like, I don't know. Not like that, but yeah, but let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. You look around this room here, I gather a number of you were really laid low by addiction at one point. Yeah? Anybody here in program? Okay. Did you know you would end up sitting in a Buddhist place between 6th Avenue and Broadway talking about prayer and meditation? Was that what you had in your book? No, we don't know. I love that. Because when I know and then it doesn't work, that's a whole other story, right? Bill W. said, it was only a matter of being able to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required for me to make my beginning. Realizing we are not all-knowing, as uncomfortable as that might be. That's it. That's it. Now, in the Pali language, which is the language that the Buddha was speaking when he spoke, vipassana means insight. It means to see clearly. So we say we do vipassana meditation, to see clearly. If we can't see clearly, how do we know what's really happening? How do we know what's true? Now, truth goes deeper than just what's on the surface, but as for a beginning. And the 12 steps are brilliant. It's a path of clear seeing. And it keeps going on and on and on. And it starts with step one, when we pierce the delusion that we are in control. And I know, even though we may pierce the delusion that we're in control of what the substance is, our general relationship to control doesn't collapse that easily. I hear sponsors sometimes saying, you have to do it this way, and then you have to do it that way, and then you... It's very controlling. And then we continue exploring with the other steps, all the different ways we try to stay in control. All the different ways our trying to stay in control has hurt other people. All the different ways our denial of our relationships and our needs and our defenses have gotten in our way. And we do it kindly, with loving kindness. So this step opens to this intention to open to a truth beyond our small egoic minds. That's the main thing. And then little by little, to let go of the intense burden of self-centeredness. It is a burden to be so self-involved. And my experience is it's also boring. But anyway. So through prayer and meditation, we increase our conscious contact. And the more conscious we are, the more we see in behavior, in thinking, in ways of acting and relating, what's going to be skillful and what's going to be unskillful. And at least in the translations, the Buddha didn't use words like good and bad. It was harmful and not harmful, wholesome and not wholesome, skillful and not skillful, at least in the translations. Because I know in our society we can come up with, I'm bad. And it doesn't work very well, because then we get hooked into being controlled by the way we see ourselves. Tartang Tulku, a Tibetan master, put it very succinctly, so I'd like to read it. By means of meditation, we can teach our minds to be calm and balanced. That doesn't happen with a 20-minute sitting necessarily. Within this calmness is a richness and a potential an inner knowledge which can render our lives boundlessly satisfying and meaningful. While the mind may be what traps us in unhealthy patterns of stress and imbalance, it is also the mind which can free us. That potential is there. Through meditation, we can tap the healing qualities of mind. I think some of you have heard me say this before. Many years ago, I had a client who was also in a meditation group that I had. And one day in session, therapy session, she said, "I don't know. Nothing has changed and everything is different." And that is such a beautiful place to be able to be. The weather is still sucks and I'm fine, Anyway. We learn this, and I'm using the word courageous, words like courageous, compassion, consciousness, contact, powerful words. We learn a courageous allowing of things to be as they are, to allow, to see them not through the lens of I'm okay with it or I'm not okay with it. It just is. It just is. Because whatever is here, and I know I can't do this all the time with myself, but whatever is here is ours to work with. It's just what's here to work with. Because we can't, I mean, if you go into a restaurant and you ask for cooked chicken and they give you cold chicken, you can say the chicken's cold and send it back. But if you get a situation in your life you don't like, where are you going to send it? There's no cook who's going to fix it. It's our gateway to freedom. Whatever is here is our gateway to freedom. Do many of you, any of you know the wonderful analogy of the lotus in the mud? The mud allows the lotus to get what it needs, the nutrients, so that it can then blossom. And lotuses can be really gorgeous, and they arise from the mud. And I'm just curious, and you don't have to say anything right now, how many of you have had a situation that was really painful, that might have been traumatic, that was really harmful, that was sad, that was disappointing, and a year or so later you go, "My God, look at my life." For me, if it wasn't for alcoholism, I would not be here. Because I don't know that there would have been anything else that would have gotten me over. But I don't know. I don't know. And so when I hear people say over and over in meetings, "I'm a grateful alcoholic," in the beginning I thought, "You got to be kidding." And then it says, "Yes. Look at the gifts in my life. Look at the gifts in my life." We always have the opportunity, always, to open to our true nature underneath all the conditioning. And conditioning is powerful. And it takes time. And very often, the lesson can feel very, very harsh. And the road can be very bumpy. But it comes back to being able to sit without all the answers. And meditation teaches us little by little, experientially teaches us to let go of our judging, to let go of our defining, to let go of telling the stories about everything. We make up so many stories, and stories, the narrative is wonderful, can be very healing, but it can also take us deeper and deeper into the world of delusion. If nothing else, if you sit down to meditate, or if you stop for a moment, we have this moment to stop. It's like before the trains collide. Just stop. I think it was Tara Brach who talked of the sacred pause. Sacred pause. And that's another thing you might want to put into your day every once in a while. I know some people are very, very, very busy and can't sit for 40 minutes or what have you on a daily basis. Okay. But to take a moment to stop. And nobody's going to know that you stopped. Except your nervous system will know. over time, if we stay with this, ultimately we can open to the fully realized conscious contact with this beingness of life, the oneness, the unity. Do you ever have that? Sometimes when I'm walking, all of a sudden, it's not like I'm walking. Something down here is going like this. I feel a breeze. I mean, there's a breeze. I see people around. And I go, sometimes it's so strong. It's like, oh my God, this is life. This is life moving me and moving through me. I'm not talking about my life, but the energy of life. And from this, compassion again comes. But this tenacious, insidious addiction that hounds us all. It's the addiction to, it's the attachment to our own views and opinions and beliefs. Look around the world at what's going on. Just go to Washington, D.C. and see what's going on. Our views, opinions, and beliefs. And here's a mantra that I will share with you. Just because I believe it doesn't mean it's true. And that's like a prayer. That's like a prayer. Maybe it is true, but it's not necessarily true. And it's this attachment to our own ideas of how things are, to our own beliefs, blinds us to the sensitivity to the effects of our actions and words on other people. Conscious contact. The Buddha talked in one of the suttas, the Satipatthana Sutta, when he talked about mindfulness, he had a refrain: mindfulness internally, externally, and both internally and externally. So if I'm being mindful, it's not just what's going on in here. I want to have a sense of, wow, there's somebody over there. What? Maybe how is what I'm saying going over there? How is that moving? So we're taking in the other. I think that was brilliant. Just about 30 years ago, all of a sudden they start talking about relational psychotherapy. And the Buddha was talking about it 2,600 years ago. Awareness internally, externally, and both. And this letting go of the suffocating, continuous reference to I, me, mine. So I know I mentioned this once before, but I like it, so I'll mention it again. I'm going to use as my memory. As soon as I say my memory, I can feel like my heart ache. If I just say the memory, it doesn't feel as personal. So, but the memory of this particular thing really, a client was very upset about taking her shower because her husband spent time in the bathroom and then there wasn't time for her to get her shower. So she was saying, I don't know how to figure in my shower. When am I going to take my shower? On and on and on. And I said, look, I have an idea. I don't know when you're going to take the shower, but I have an idea. Drop the word my. Think of it as, I'm going to take a shower. She came back the next week. She said, I don't know. It was such an easy thing. I just had a shower every morning. There was no problem. But the my shower got in the way every time her husband went into the bathroom, even if she wasn't ready for the shower, was, oh, I'm not going to be able to take my shower now. It's such a perfect example on a little daily basis how Shenpa works, how we're hooked. So we're very, very quick to jump to conclusions and judgments. Anybody do that? I do it. Without fully taking in the whole picture. A lot of stories, but I won't burden you. Meditation, again, helps us see, helps us stop. And that's a key word again. Learning to cultivate non-judgmental awareness. So notice as you go through the week, hopefully more than just a week or just 5 minutes after here, or notice when you're judging something. Just notice. It's going on unbelievably all the time. We don't even notice that we're doing it. You walk down the street, that one has big feet, this one walks too slow, but she's got a big tush. You know, I'm very aware of my hips, so anybody I see with hips, I have a story to tell. I mean, these are nice people. And God knows what they're thinking as they pass me, but, you know, just notice. Yeah. If we do this, it keeps us connected again to that which is and to the who and what of what's really here. What is this? What is this underneath my personality and my... What is this underneath my personality and my conditioning? What's here? Same thing that you got over there. Different personalities, different things on the surface, different conditionings. So, I'm trying to see what I'm not going to say because I'm talking too long. The other thing about meditation, it's a scientific investigation and examination of the nama-rupa, of the body-mind, because it's just looking. It's just looking. You observe closely what starts to come up. You observe closely the relationship to it, what's happening in your body and mind in the present moment. And you're looking. And of course, there's a piece here where you have to be careful because it's very seductive when you get into places of deep, deep concentration and go into periods of bliss. Then you get attached to that and then you want more of that. And how do you get that back? And then you're back to the same old place again. So people ask, should I practice every day? So my only answer to that would be is we eat every day, we take care of our bodies every day. Many of us go to the gym every day. Why not watch your mind a little bit every day? You know? Well, I can't think of words, this is embarrassing. What is it when you... take floss. Yeah, thank you. It takes a village, I think. It's not my memory, it's just a memory problem. But we floss our teeth, or many of us floss our teeth every... Don't you want to floss your mind? All the gunk that gets up there, just get some of it out. And it doesn't mean sitting for 30, 40, 50 minutes. What if you sit for 6 minutes? What if you sit for 10? Or 15? Or what if when you're walking to work, you just walk mindfully? So, I think it's good to practice every day in some way, using prayer and or meditation. People say, can vipassana be used in daily life? Well, you can have awareness of whatever you're doing while you're doing it, right? Clear thinking. You just have to remember. Joseph Goldstein put it so well. It's easy to be mindful. It's just hard to remember to be mindful. And that is indeed the case. But as we do this more and more, and as we start to see, as we have seen, I think, in steps 4, 5, 8, 9, and 10, how we speak, act, and think actually affects other people. So now we start to really see what is the effect I'm having on other people. And again, being connected and experiencing inwardly and outwardly, internally and externally. And we get into then a very deep truth of we are all part of one. We are all part. We are interrelated and interdependent. That is, but then we start to know that in truth. So here's a quote from the 12 and 12. When we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our mind, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. So, what I'd like to do is end with a beautiful poem, a contemplation by Rumi, 13th century. And Rumi, as many of you know, he's sort of the voice of unconditional love. So, move beyond any attachment to names. Every war and every conflict between human beings has happened because of some disagreement about names. It's such an unnecessary foolishness, because just beyond the arguing, there's a long table of companionship set and waiting for us to sit down. What is praised is one, so the praise is one too. Many jugs being poured into a huge basin. All religions, all this singing, one song. The differences are just illusion and vanity. Sunlight looks slightly different on this wall than it does on that wall, and a lot different on this other one, but it's still one light. We have borrowed these clothes, these time and space personalities from a light, and when we praise, we pour them back in. So let's just sit for a moment. And just let your heart, mind, open to what may have been something that opened for you tonight, if anything. What you might want to take with you, if anything. And just experiencing the opening to this, to whatever it is, whatever it is. And we sit here tonight. We all have different backgrounds. We don't look alike. Different conditioning. Different hopes and dreams in many ways. And yet we are all one.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.